This is a Poets and Writers Live podcast. To hear more, visit us at pw.org/live.
Good morning. I've spent most of my career in traditional publishing, in sub-rights, editorial, working as a magazine reporter, and writing a personal finance book published by a traditional publisher. But now I spend most of my time helping authors find alternative ways to publish their books. My column for Poets and Writers magazine, The Savvy Self-Publisher, profiles different authors along with some experts, agents, booksellers, publicists, marketers, to offer advice for authors who want to self-publish. Years ago, when an author couldn't find a publisher or a literary agent, the person had few options: put the book away or pay to have the book published by a vanity publisher. Fast forward to today. While the number of traditional New York publishers has shrunk, the opportunities to publish on your own, known as self-publishing or direct publishing, are growing. According to Balker, the number of self-published titles published last year was nearly 460,000, up 17% from the prior year, and up a whopping 434% from 2008. And if you're wondering, it's not just ebooks. Print titles were up a very solid 29% from the prior year. And interestingly, 75% of the books came from three companies: Smashwords, CreateSpace, and Lulu. This is all great news for those of you who want to self-publish, either because you want to maintain more control of your book or because you haven't yet found an agent or publisher to publish. Opportunities and outlets abound, which is good. But just like you wouldn't wake up one Sunday and rip out your shower because you want a new bathroom, or if your friends and family tell you that you really should be selling your delicious brownies and muffins, you wouldn't immediately quit your job and rent space to open a bakery without finding out the costs, licensing, health department requirements, etc. It's the same with self-publishing. While there are many choices, and it's easier in today's internet age, you still need to understand what's involved and do your homework so you don't end up disappointed or wasting your money. That means reviewing contracts, asking what terms and language mean if you're unfamiliar with them, checking references, and looking at actual books from publishers you're considering. In addition to making your book available, if you haven't found a traditional publisher, there are a number of advantages to self-publishing. It can be more profitable. After you have recouped the cost of publishing and printing, any profits are yours. You don't have to split them with a publisher and/or agent. Speed. Many publishers still take between 9 and 18 months from getting a finished manuscript to publishing a book. A self-published book can be available in a much shorter time, literally days from when you post the files online. Maintaining control. You decide what content stays in the book or what the cover looks like. You don't have to compromise because a sales rep or a marketing manager doesn't like a particular color or font that you happen to love. But when you're self-publishing, there are many more decisions that you will have to make. For example, format. Do you want a physical hardcover or a paperback? Do you only want an ebook? Will you do print on demand, which means that books are made available according to demand, and then you don't have to worry about warehousing and storage of books or having them returned by accounts? Does your book have illustrations? Does it need to be in color? Should your book be oversized or a standard 6x9? Marketing. If your book is tied to your business, say that you're in sales or you're an active speaker, then you may be comfortable doing back-of-the-room sales to your clients. But if you're self-publishing a novel or a narrative nonfiction, how will you attract readers? What's your platform? You've probably heard agents or publishers use that term. Essentially, it means what will you, the author, do to get people to buy the book? Are you active on social media? Everyone, whether you're in traditional or self-publishing, needs to be using it these days, well ahead of publication, so that you have a following already built when your book is published. Why Amazon? You know, why is CreateSpace so popular? Even though a lot of people don't like Amazon, it makes it very easy to self-publish your book. It's a POD publisher. Your book is available on Kindle, which is an increasingly popular platform. So before you make a decision, understand the process. Choose a format, a trim size, format your Word document to fit that size, convert the document to a PDF, have a cover designed, turn the cover into a PDF, upload it. You get back a proof, which you review and make changes. So it's really a very manageable process. If you're only printing a small number of books, and if you're comfortable with formatting and using your computer, you can probably do it yourself. But otherwise, you might want someone to do the conversion for you. And the reality is that the costs can add up, especially if you want your book to look professional. So you might have to find, hire, and pay for the services that many traditional publishers provide. A cover designer, a development editor, a copy editor. Some of the direct or self-publishing companies offer packages, but you might want to find your own designer or editor. Ask people for references. Look at LinkedIn discussion groups about self-publishing. Type in a company name in Google to see if any complaints come up. Read your contract. Question anything that confuses you. Don't pay for services that you don't want or don't need. If you're happy having people purchase the book online, don't expect to have brick-and-mortar distribution. Some companies even charge you if you want to talk to a representative, but you might want to pay for that if you aren't familiar with the process or have a problem. But don't sign up for everything, and you'll see a package that has Facebook ads, review placements. Some of this you can do yourself, and some of it you won't need, so it's pointless to pay for it ahead of time. If Amazon is your primary outlet, make the most of your Amazon page. Make sure you have a complete bio, an accurate description of your book, any advance quotes or excerpts from reviews if you've got them, a link to your blog, and include categories, up to 5, in which your book belongs. Pricing is key. You want your book to be in the range of similar topic books, low priced but not so low that you won't make any money. Reviews can be tough to get. You can pay to have it reviewed in special sections of PW or Kirkus that focus on self-published books, but you can also try to do it on your own by making your book available to bloggers and freelance book reviewers. But probably the best way to learn about self-publishing is from people who have done it. So let me introduce the panel. Unfortunately, our author, Keith Devlin, who many of you know as the math guy on NPR and has a wonderful British accent, had car trouble, so he is stuck at the side of a highway and won't be here. So speaking for him will be his agent, Ted Weinstein, who's been a literary agent for nearly 15 years, but also has worked for publishers and has also contributed articles to a number of Bay Area publications. And Amy Farrow, a publicist and social media expert who spent nearly 8 years at Wiley Josie Bass here in San Francisco. So I think I'll start with you, Keith, to sort of talk about... Ted, sorry. To talk about...
Hello, Keith Devlin here.
Now, we know that this e-book, Leonardo and Steve, was originally a chapter in the hardcover book, and the publisher didn't feel the chapter quite belonged in the book, but you and the author thought, well, let's turn it into our own book. So walk us through the process.
Sure. Keith has a book called Man of Numbers about Fibonacci, the actual historical man that we know now for the mathematical series, and he's the man who brought literally Arabic numerals to the West 800 years ago. And there was a chapter in Keith's manuscript comparing Fibonacci, who brought personal computing to everyday people, and Steve Jobs, who did something similar about 800 years later. Really neat chapter, very interesting parallels, but it just didn't fit in a work of history. So the publisher said, let's pull this out. And in the old days, we would have just sold it to Wired or Scientific American as a sort of first serialization or a complimentary article to help drive publicity for the book. But instead, Keith, who's always up for any adventure, I said to him, hey, what about publishing this as an ebook single? He said, sure, let's do it. Different accent, sorry, I just don't do a British accent well. And he knows his limitations. He's written now 30-plus books. You've probably heard him on the radio. He's just an absolute media monster, very comfortable, but also with what he doesn't know. So we went and we got him a freelance editor because he knew he needed editing. We got a great freelance cover designer. And then because I had done some direct publishing just to experiment with it prior, I did all the nuts and bolts work of the conversion and uploading. So after the professionals worked it over, after we had a cover, within an hour from my laptop at the office, we had his book published as an ebook. Now, I deal with a lot of editors at publishing houses, and I say to all of them, have you done this? And any of them who haven't, I won't do business with, because they need to understand just how easy the logistics of self-publishing are. Everything Deb just laid out is so important that I'm shortcutting all that went into this, including publicity and all the planning and everything else. But the actual uploading of a Word document to make an ebook is an hour's task. It's trivial. And if somebody hasn't gone to the process to see that this is available, whether it's an author or an editor or anybody else in publishing, you're doing a disservice to your career. So we put it up on the web. It was there. One of the neat opportunities and why this project was a bit unusual, it wasn't a standalone. As Deb mentioned, we had the publisher's support, and they said, great, take the first chapter of Man of Numbers. Digitally include that as a sample in the ebook Leo and Steve, which was only a chapter long. So it became a sales tool for the physical book that was also coming out at the same time. So that was benefit one. Benefit two was that a number of media outlets weren't as interested in covering this book. Unlike Keith's other popular math books, it's historical. So some outlets, tech particularly, just didn't think it was that interesting for their listenership or readership. But all of a sudden, you have this nifty little ebook about Steve Jobs, and their ears perked up, and we got Keith on to be able to talk about both of those different book products. So the digital ebook was a short. It sold in modest numbers, but the benefit to Keith's career and to the big physical book that Bloomsbury published were enormous.
When he got publicity, was it through the publicist for the hardcover or through his own efforts?
Well, Keith, because he's on NPR every other week, actually that was a period where NPR wasn't allowing their guest contributors to talk about new books of theirs. It was actually a change in policy and we were very frustrated. But him just being in the world is helpful. He's got the ultimate platform. But then the person who was really driving it was the professional, experienced, spectacularly good publicist at Bloomsbury.
But don't you think your experience was unusual? In other words, here was a chapter because of the Steve Jobs that lent itself to publishing on its own. And also, I'm not sure every other publisher would be quite that cooperative about having a related book come out at the same time. Yep. I mean, it's, as Amy will tell us, it's tough to get publicity, and here essentially you're sort of splitting the efforts a bit to cover the books.
Yeah. No question. And if the circumstances had been different, it's a possibility that Bloomsbury would have also published the short ebook. But George Gibson, one of the last gentleman publishers, I adore him. He's one of the greatest in the business to this day. He said we just couldn't turn it around fast enough. The decision to pull the chapter out to do it as a short ebook came too quickly to make that work. But I think now that folks have seen Keith's success with it, more publishers are going to consider doing that kind of a combined effort.
Would you recommend it to another client if you either couldn't place a book or if there was some disagreement over editorial content?
Sure. That is the $64,000 question about all direct publishing. I call it direct publishing, not self-publishing. We've seen a number of ebook startups, Atavist Books, Byliner, and so on, and a lot of them have really struggled. When you're selling a product for $3.99 or $2.99 or 99 cents, even if your cost of goods is much less, it's hard to sell enough to amortize all your other legitimate editorial and publicity costs. It's a challenge. You really got to have a platform. You've really got to have a plan. If you're selling a full book, it's different for a higher price point. And then it's all of the calculus that goes into any self-publishing decision. And I talk with all of my clients about it as a possibility. A few have experimented, a few have thought about it. For the moment, though, for the people that I've worked with, their choice has been the advantage was to go with traditional publishing.
So, Amy, we know it's tough these days. Fewer book reviews, less outlets doing extensive book review coverage. It must be even harder for self-published authors who are either doing their own publicity or just trying to get coverage. So what sort of pointers do you have for self-published authors so that they can get the same kind of attention that a traditionally published book would have?
I have a lot of pointers. Probably, if you can afford it, invest in a professional publicist who is used to dealing with the media.
Well, walk us through. I think people will often say, well, why? And it has to do with the relationships that a publicist has with media and the fact that you don't just want to pull a list of book review editor at this publication. So sort of walk us through what's an experienced publicist bringing to the table.
Certainly years of experience dealing with the media, learning, if obviously they have their own media contacts that they know well and know how they like to be approached. But then even establishing new relationships, say they haven't worked on a specific subject area before, it's kind of a delicate balance. You want to be respectful of their time and you want to do the research, you want to understand what they cover, and if your subject area even relates to it at all. If not, don't waste their time. They get very sort of annoyed by pitches that don't relate to what they cover. It just kind of clogs their inbox and their voicemail. So, definitely do your research. Definitely think outside the box. You want to, because there are so little review space out there these days, being self-published, you're not going to get the same attention as from a traditional book publisher. Think about, approaching journalists who don't necessarily do book reviews but might write about a certain subject area. Say, like, they might cover Apple, in Keith's case, or, whatever your subject area is. Maybe it's, right now I'm actually working with a self-published author on her dating and relationship book. And so I'm researching bloggers and journalists who write about dating. And so not just reaching out to book review editors, but also journalists who might include the book in an article or interview the author as an expert.
When someone's making a pitch, so they've got someone's name, maybe they've seen someone write about something, they think their book would be worth talking about. Is it an email with a very clever subject? Do you say new book on X, the title of the book? What's the actual pitch that someone could craft if they're trying to get the attention of a writer?
If it's timely, if it's something going on in the news, you definitely want to make that clear in the subject area, how your book or how you as an expert can talk about what's going on in the news. If it's basically just trying to get coverage for your book and there isn't sort of any, timeliness going on. I've found, to be honest, saying new book and follow-up, just being very clear about what you're approaching them about actually seems to work better than some, and you want to be careful because a lot of times certain words or certain wording can just end up in their spam box. So I find that being creative but also being direct about what you're approaching them is the best.
And how persistent should someone be? We've all heard the case of someone says, but, if I just as you might submit a book to a publisher, to many publishers, you keep trying, and someone's like, but I know it really should be covered by this publication. At what point do you say, look, you're just hurting yourself because you're being an annoyance? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, definitely. You don't want to annoy them because they, especially this day and age with social media, people can really badmouth you, and publicists, kind of have a bad reputation, the pushy ones. So you have to learn to be, learn that balance, and you have to learn to take no gracefully, and you have to learn, even if you get a no, that's great, because most of the time you don't hear anything back. And, I'd say after a few attempts, just let it go and move on to the next outlet. That said, if you're not getting a certain, any sort of response from a certain contact at a publication you feel very strongly about, try approaching somebody else. Try doing more research and saying, well, maybe this person would be interested, or reach out to the managing editor and let them know what your book is about and how, you admire their publication, and say, who else would you suggest I reach out to? But just be very respectful and be graceful about any rejection you might get.
Now, for authors who aren't familiar or aren't active on social media platforms, and I know I've been hearing and sort of use as a rule of thumb, you want to be as active as possible kind of 3 to 6 months before the book is out so people already know you. So someone's busily writing or close to finishing the manuscript and you say, okay, let's get started. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them? In other words, clearly someone's going to be more comfortable on one platform versus another, and maybe Instagram is more appropriate for some books than other books. How would you sort of introduce social media to authors who really haven't been using it, but recognize that they should be for their book launch?
Well, I think Twitter is probably the most powerful social media tool out there not just authors, for anybody who's trying to talk about something that's going to get the attention of people they don't know. You know, Facebook's very hard. You know, you can only interact with people that like your page, and it's really hard to get likes. So Twitter is a very important social media tool. Instagram to an extent, especially if you have a very visual book. But my recommendation is, you know, make sure to follow, you know, influencers, people that you respect. And ideally, they'll follow you back. follow media outlets that you think would be interested in your book. You know, people, anybody talking about the subject area that you're writing about, search hashtags, you know, hashtag relationships or hashtag dating or hashtag, you know, poetry, you know, whatever it is. Follow those people that are talking about it. So that's the first step. The second step is, you know, start the conversation, engage with those people. You know, obviously in your profile, you want to mention that you have a book coming out, you want to have a link to it, whether it's your website or a buy page. You know, and then as we, you know, make sure people know that the book is coming, but you don't want to oversell it. You know, you don't want it to be all just about your book. You want to create that dialogue and create those relationships and, you know, tweet about other things like, oh, there's a really interesting article that relates to my book. You know, just because if it's all about you and your book, then people are going to be turned off and they're not going to, you know, pay attention. They'll start to unfollow you. So, you know, just engage, be part of the conversation.
I'd like to add to that, just with a note of caution. Everything Amy just said was exactly right for authors of the right style of books. Not every author belongs on social media. And you need to be really self-aware. Two things. One, your temperament and personality, and what is it you have to say on a daily basis? And two, is the type of writing you're doing suitable for that kind of publicity? Not every book is. That if you're a novelist, it's unclear to me what, unless it's a very thematic novel, very theme-driven novel, news-driven, what is it you have to say that's related to your novelizing that I would want to read about day in, day out? You know, you better entertain me on Twitter, I'm going away. And for most of you wonderful writers, I would love to learn about your book, but Twitter wouldn't occur to me as a place that I would find out about you. So for some authors, absolutely that's the place to be. For others, not. So think about it thoughtfully. Don't just say, oh, I need to be on social media. That's the sort of the dust bowl part of Twitter where folks have gone on, they've got 23 followers and 7 posts, and then it's over. Use your time, use your effort, use your marketing mojo appropriately, and that's about good self-awareness.
But for both of you, what's the best way to launch a book? And let's focus first on nonfiction. It's a first-time author, a topic that would seem to have wide interest, but not so unusual. And, you know, kind of how do you get the book to stand out from everything else that's being published during the same time period and everything else that may be happening in the news that's taking over from mentioning the book? Mm-hmm.
Big difference, fiction versus nonfiction. So thank you for saying I can start with nonfiction. That's what I know. It depends on whether you've got something that's tied to a timely subject, at which point you want to be seen pretty quickly as, oh, the most astute commentator. Of course, the best writer about a particular topic, and then you're riding the topic. If it's something that's a little bit more about you and your expertise, the book should really just be a ratification of your existing fame. And I mean that very seriously, that we're all small celebrities. In my tiny world, I'm a bit of a celebrity. In your larger world, I hope you're a bigger celebrity. But a book is a ratification, a book by itself. People come to agents all the time, hey, get me a book deal and I'll be famous. No. Get famous and I'll get you a book deal. Yeah. But that fame can be in all different parts of the world. So if it's something that's about your expertise and your presence in the world, make sure it's ratifying what's already there. Another way to do that, and I somehow developed a specialty in books like this, are clients who've literally gone viral. And I don't mean influenza, I mean that they've had something that exploded on the web. So Austin Kleon, his first book was Steal Like an Artist. He was a nobody advertising copywriter who put a presentation up on the web that he'd given about how to steal like an artist, and somehow the world beat a path to his door. So after we had 1.6 million visits to a single page on a nobody's website, that was a really easy auction to run. Another book that'll be coming out in just a couple months is Elle Luna. She had a post, she's local, she had a post on Medium called The Crossroads of Should and Must. and it's a Follow Your Bliss story. She has 135,000 Instagram followers because she's a great artist and had built that fame for herself. The piece itself touched a nerve, so again, that was a multi-day auction with publishers fighting over her. So in this the case where it's about somebody's personality and persona, that the book was ratifying it, the book wasn't creating that. So again, a lot of self-awareness is important. Who are you? What is it you're writing? What's the right outlet to build yourself into something large before the book is coming out? And that varies depending on the type of book.
And I would recommend leveraging what you spoke about earlier, your platform, whether it's your business contacts, whether it's your family and friends. I mean, you want to get them involved. Let them know you have a book coming out, champion it on their social media accounts, ask people to go out and buy the book. You know, don't give your book away to all your family and friends. make sure they buy it and post reviews on Amazon or other, retailers, because the more reviews you have, the more Amazon's going to sort of bump you up on the search lists. We liked, when we worked at Wiley, we liked to have everything kind of converge at the same time. So have publicity start, have marketing, very little advertising, but, the email push, to get people to buy books. We ask authors, okay, you want to reach out to your networks like 2 or 3 times and then, get them to pre-order and then bug them again maybe a month before the publication date and then, bug them again when the book is out. Just, because sometimes they need a few reminders.
And people can be pretty shameless. I mean, I've gotten emails where someone says, I really want my book to be a bestseller, or I really want it to be in the top 100 of Amazon. Buy it today. And then I'll get, an email a few days later, did you buy it? So
Yeah. You don't want to be too pushy.
Well, but, there's a fine line of not offending people, but it's worth noting that people do that, and people who do that who happen to have huge, huge lists, and those are the books that do rank highly on Amazon. So it's annoying if you're not really a fan or a follower and you get the email, but it's done. And there are probably, sort of more modest ways where you can tell people, hey, I'm really excited, that I've been working on this book for the last 18 months. Well, it's finally here. And then have a link to the page.
I don't know how many of you have heard the notion from Kevin Kelly of 1,000 true fans. And his premise, I think the better number is actually 10,000, is that as you share your creative life with the world, you want to build a bunch of people that just think you're the best. And over time, you're going to sell them stuff to support you. And there are musicians like Jill Sobule, who is not on the radio, but she's got a great following and keeps selling her albums and has built a life as a troubadour musician because she's got a devoted audience and finds ways to monetize that over time. Nagging sometimes by my album, other things. So to the extent that you are seeing any one book as just part of a lifetime relationship with people who really think you're great, that's the right mental model, even if there's much more excitement as a particular book launches. But the big picture should be an ongoing relationship with your fans.
Yeah, and can I add on to that? Another cool thing that I've had authors do is, say they're very big on social media or they have a strong following, a blog following, they'll sort of engage their friends and family and followers in the whole process. So they'll say, hey, here's a couple versions of the cover. I'm taking votes. Who likes which one best? Or here's a sample chapter of, can you guys give me some feedback? What do you think? And then they feel like they're part of the process and they're part of the publishing, and it's like their book too. So I think that's a fun way to do it. And, just blog, if you have a blog about it, and go to other bloggers and ask them, hey, can I guest blog for you? Or hey, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. How can we partner up? Just leveraging that sort of network as well and involving people through the whole process.
You mentioned that Keith actually hired a designer and an editor, and he's a pretty experienced author. How important is that? And I guess what I'm trying to address is, are we past the point, is there still a stigma to a self-published book?
There's a great line which I remind myself and remind all my clients of, easy writing makes for hard reading. And if you're not having your work edited, it's not ready to see the light of public eyes. Somebody who's already written 30 books, Keith Devlin, knew he needed an independent editor. It is absolutely essential. If you're not going to go that far, all you're going to do is play into the existing stigma, which exists for self-published works. So the stigma is somewhat diminishing. People can find their own audience. We've seen the case studies of Hugh Howey with Wool and Amanda Hocking with her series. There are self-published authors who are reaching an audience and it explodes through word of mouth. That's great. They're also real professionals. Have you talked to any of them? And they treated their writing with a real sense of seriousness. So the more that you are, until the day you decide to and go ahead with self-publishing, the more you see yourself as somebody in the traditional groves of publishing, the better. I always advocate even somebody doing direct publishing of their own nonfiction book, write the book proposal, because that's essentially a business plan. And you're about to invest your own time, let alone a little bit of your own money. Don't do it unless you've got a good plan that says, plausibly, this could be a success. And the more that you do these things, that are, it just all boils down to professionalism, the more you will step away from the big pack. The numbers Debbie mentioned were just astonishing, the number of self-published books. Most of that isn't good. The more you treat yourself like a professional, the more you'll stand out immediately.
Now, I know Keith has another direct book that in a way is far more successful because there's a year in, year out built-in audience. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that a little.
Keith teaches some of the MOOCs, massive online, open online courses, and one called Intro to Math Thinking. And he was looking for a textbook and realized he had so much material that he just basically assembled his own textbook and we direct published it digitally because it's an online course. Few people want a physical book. Turns out that some people did. So what we did was a very straightforward publishing project, having had the success with Leo and Steve. Put it up on Amazon in digital form, which was complicated because there's a lot of math symbology. So that was a bit of an interesting challenge. And then also offered it available as a print on demand. And then what I did was, you're wondering, what do you need an agent for any of this? The answer is not much. What I did was I went and sold foreign rights for him. So we've now sold translation rights to that same book for tens of thousands of dollars all over Asia because he's got an audience there. The book itself, steady, and every time he reruns the course, there's people who want to buy that book. And because he's got the easy opportunity, there was no reason to go through a traditional publisher. He had the material. It was in good shape. The time horizon and the amount he would have had to give up to a major publisher just didn't make any sense. So that's, I think, of more as opportunistic direct publishing.
With traditional publishing, there's usually this window. There's a pub date, and you think of trying to get all the publicity and marketing around the first 6 weeks or so. Does that still hold true, Amy, for a self-published book? Because maybe there are reasons why, you know, someone completed it, it's available, but then, you know, someone is busy with something else. I mean, is there still that kind of, gee, you really have to tell people about it right when it comes out, or is there a longer life and potential for publicity?
I think when it comes to book reviews, they want to cover new books. So if a book has been out for 6 months, they're going to say, no, forget it. They like to review books the month that it comes out or in like Publishers Weekly's case in advance. But I think, you know, beyond that, for article placements or radio interviews or, you know, certainly can it can extend. I think from a, you know, a traditional publisher, they always have new books coming out, so they have to focus their attention on what's new. So that's kind of one of the reasons why there's that sort of 2 to 3 month period where that's the life of the book for the most part. But yeah, if you want book reviews, you got to do it right when the book comes out or in advance, ideally. You know, galleys are important for those. But that said, it's very hard to get reviews even for traditional publishers. So yeah, I mean, I think, and especially if there's something in the news that ties in, there's always an opportunity after the book comes out.
For those of you that are writing fiction, there's also an emerging body of knowledge from all these successful self-publishers, direct publishers, that the more you put out, the better it is, that each book sells your other books. In the old days of traditional commercial thrillers and the like, publishers wanted a new book every year because an audience wanted a new book from you each year. Now they're pushing authors to do 2 books a year, a big one and a small one. In the groves of self-publishing, to the extent you can slice it into smaller novella-length pieces and put out a couple every 6 months, there are all kinds of really interesting techniques that folks are experimenting with and are finding success. So to the extent you can produce more books, any one of them might not be timely, but the aggregate can have marketing advantage for all of them.
What's your crystal ball for the future? If we looked back on last year and it was Amazon, 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 any predictions or any sort of outlook for publishing in general and then specifically self-publishing?
Mm-hmm. More of the same. I think it was interesting. We've reached an inflection point in the percentage of books that are being sold digitally. Physical books are not going to go away, certainly not anytime soon. Although I love my e-reader, if I could find a wedding ring for it, it would be just wonderful. There's still, even I'll sit down with a physical book sometimes. And so we're settling generally on about 50-50 for, depending on genre, e-books versus physical books. The opportunities for direct publishing, I think, are providing a really good poke in the rear end to traditional publishers. You've got this great opportunity that authors can say now, hey, what are you doing for me? They can say that literally to agents and then also to the publishers. And I think that's good for everybody. There are more opportunities. I think that more people are going to be experimenting because they can move quickly and flexibly with different ways of doing digital publishing. And I think over time that'll inform the way the major publishers do their work. So way back when, I was one of the first to sell a blog to a book, back in 2003, I think, and now everybody's doing that. Similarly, what we did with Keith, with this special, you know, complimentary small book, publishers are starting to do the same thing more consistently. So for everybody in this room who's a writer, you can be trailblazers at very low cost with really great opportunities, experiment like crazy, have a lot of fun, and the ultimate ratification is when you start to see major publishers picking up the techniques that you have pioneered. So I see nothing but blue skies, except that you're in a very competitive realm where, as Debbie laid out, more and more books are coming out every year, so it's ever more incumbent upon you to think like a marketer. The downside of self-publishing is it's publishing, it's not writing, meaning you have to take on every single one of the roles that there's a very smart person sitting in a publishing house here in San Francisco or New York or wherever. They're doing lots of different things. I will not, even though they're my antagonist, I will not let anyone disparage the major publishers on this. They do an enormous array of roles, and you're going to have to take each of those on. So do it thoughtfully. Make sure your loved ones are going to be supportive because you're going to have less time for them. The opportunities are there, but the burdens are pretty large. And then let me put in a plug for two resources also. If any of you haven't had a chance to see it, there's something called the Self-Publishing Bootcamp from Carla King. And she does an occasional workshop, and there's a book available, and it's the single best resource for just the nuts and bolts of how do you self-publish. And then on my own website, if you're having trouble sleeping, I have a couple of workshops I've given over the years on how to write a book proposal and the business of publishing. Even if you're going to go down the direct publishing path, they're worth listening to again just to think like a business person. That's the biggest change. You're going from being a writer to being a business person.
Yeah, I often tell authors that they think the hard part was writing the book, but in fact, getting it published and promoting it is equally hard or possibly more challenging. Can we open it up if you've got any questions about self-publishing or other questions for the panelists?
Sure. The question is, what about copyright? The digital world means theoretically material is cuttable and pastable and piratable. That is certainly true. Legally, you don't need to go through the machinations you did in the old days. Your work is inherently copyrighted, so that protection already exists. If you register it with the feds, then you get the right to sue somebody for damages, not just for immediate loss of income. The real issue, though, is about you being out there in the world. If your material is so great that somebody might steal it, great, just get more famous than they are. I think that folks who are spending time worrying about their words being out in the world, you're not thinking the right way. You should be sharing your words, sharing your insight with the world with your name on them. And anybody who pirates, send them a nasty note and don't worry about them.
There are ways to protect, I mean, PDFs that you send, and you know, so they're uncuttable, uneditable. And then ebooks, I don't think you can.
Well, there's DRM and there's not. My issue, I'm going to use a line from, I think it was Cory Doctorow from Boing Boing. Your enemy is obscurity, not piracy. We can all go home now. That's the only thing you need to think about.
On that topic of getting a little bit more famous, and how do you do that? As a music journalist and musician and writer and et cetera, like we all are these days, you know, I've been told, and I believe I understand how you should do everything correctly. Do the one-third personal, one-third relevant to your peers, one-third self-promotion, etc. And even if you are taking on all these big burdens and pitching editors in the correct way, it seems like sometimes even if you do it all correctly and you do it all well and you do it all a lot, there's still a great deal of luck and je ne sais quoi involved that's very difficult. And everyone can get 200 followers with a great deal of work, but how do you really blow it up beyond that? And of course it's impossible to answer that, but how about one question, which is, do you have advice for contacting those big people that you respect, direct messaging, et cetera, in a successful way?
Well, I mean, I would, you know, if you're talking social media, I would just, you know, of course, you're going to get a lot of being ignored. That's just the reality. I mean, that's my job is 90% being ignored. But approach them. Let them know how much you admire their work, they've said for a long time, if you want somebody to follow you, ask them. You know, I don't know if I agree with that, but you know, I would say just be direct and be considerate and be flattering and see how, you know, that's on social media. I don't know if you have anything.
Well, I'm going to disagree because I think that's important that you hear that there's not one right viewpoint. My client Austin Kleon has a great line. The saddest line in the 21st century, follow me back.
Yeah.
I think that the right way is not to go, I'm assuming you're talented, connected, that everything you're doing is exactly right, to go and try to ride somebody's coattails by saying, hey, can I jump on your coattails? I don't think that's the right way to go about it. I think by being really freaking good and getting your material out in the world, people who are influential and people who aren't are going to find you. And, you know, Joyce Carol Oates, who's going to be here a little bit later, you know, she's on Twitter and links to stuff that she finds intriguing. It's not about people asking her. It's that they put something out in the world that somebody famous or not famous or infamous sees as really neat. So I don't think there's a technique to get famous people to like you other than just being really interesting to everybody.
But also sometimes it pays to ask. Yeah. Years ago, I published a personal finance book, and the author, and it was focused on finance for African Americans. And the author was not well known, and she said, "Well, would it help if I could get Jesse Jackson to write the foreword?" And we said, "Sure, it would. Do you know him?" And she says, "No, but I think he would be interested in the subject of the book." Well, lo and behold, it took about a month, but she got her book, and he wrote the foreword, and it did make a difference because instead of going in with first book by unknown author, we had first book by unknown author, but a foreword by Jesse Jackson, which we put on the front of the book. So I think there's something to be said for don't assume someone won't respond, or don't fear rejection and don't ask. Sometimes ask. I mean, if you can get someone's email, or if you can find a way to reach somebody who you want to write about your book, or maybe to write a foreword or endorse it, just try. I mean, chances are you will get no's, but if you get that one yes, that's the important one, great.
I have a question. Could you give us an idea of what's the financial investment we would have to make for direct publishing? Break it down a little bit of what does a professional editor cost, illustrator, publicist?
You know, that's a really hard question because there are some sort of do-it-yourself shops where people are spending less than $1,000, and then people can spend upwards of $30,000, $40,000. In general, what I'm hearing from the authors I've interviewed for the column and Poets and Writers is that people seem to be spending in the neighborhood of between $7,500 and $15,000, and that's where they've hired a professional designer and an editor. You might want to have a budget in mind. There are a number of sites where you can literally get a cover design for $99, or you know, various ones where you have people sort of pitch you on a design and you choose a design, and that's very affordable. If you use a designer, an artist who's worked for some of the traditional publishers, then chances are it's going to cost you closer to $1,000 or more. Editors vary. You know, you can get a copy editor to copy edit your book sometimes for less than $1,000. If you have a 500-page nonfiction book that needs extensive development editing, that could cost you $10,000 to $15,000.
There's also the barn raising, the sort of Tom Sawyer model that my goddaughter's mom just self-published a book about Chinese Mandarin immersion classes, a very specific topic, and she knows it's a small audience, so she did it herself. She actually crowdsourced the copy editing because there were a bunch of other parents who were really invested in it, many of whom were professionals in the writing game. So to the extent you can get other folks involved who know what they're doing, it's not just sort of joint labor by unqualified people, think entrepreneurial. You can wheel and deal for lots of good talent, in part depending on what you have to offer in barter.
A couple of quick comment and a question. I've seen a lot of people, my name is Connie, undo their success on social media by friend requesting you and then immediately ask you to like their page. And when they do that and they have no other presence on Facebook, the higher level authors, i.e. Marge Pearcey, they get very mad at it. So it's one thing you can really undo your own self-promotion is to not be interested, not be a presence, and then suddenly when your book comes out, start friending people so they can like your author page. Don't do that. Yeah. Be a presence already. And then I wanted to ask you about a new publishing model that I'm seeing and what your thoughts were on it. I have mixed feelings about it. Some of the presses will accept your manuscript, then they have a 250 minimum run or pre-sales. And if you don't sell the 250 or whatever their minimum buy is, you end up buying all the books, which to me really grays the relationship between self-publishing now and having a press that says they're a press, but you end up paying the cost. So I just wanted your feedback and if you've heard of those.
Don't do it. I have to be careful because we're in public and I don't want to be arrested for... There are plenty of wonderful outlets, Smashwords for digital, Amazon and CreateSpace for digital and print, Lulu for print, to get your work out in the world. And you can get inexpensive POD from two of those sources. There's no reason to go with one of these allegedly hybrid models where you're talking about buybacks and number of this and that and the offset printing, and POD is getting cheaper and cheaper. And that just sounds shadier and shadier. Maybe the people involved are those of high honor, but the model, there's nothing to recommend it.
I just wanted to make a comment and ask if there was anybody in the house today from BAIPA or B-A-I-P-A. It's the Bay Area Independent Publishers Association. Oh, great. Right, I'm on their mailing list. I'm not actually a representative of them, but their website is baipa.org, and they seem like a great resource for anybody local who's either self-publishing or small presses, so I just wanted to put out a word for them.
Great. About self-publishing, Deborah, if you're publishing a book with Amazon, that's fine for their channel, but my understanding is you also should be publishing with Ingram Spark, because bookstores won't order from the evil empire, and Lulu's economic model won't make sense for bookstores either. And BAPER's excellent. Carla King is going to be at the San Francisco Writers Conference February 12th to 16th, and there'll be a track, self-publishing track throughout the conference. On Monday, she'll be doing her one-day self-publishing boot camp.
For those who don't know, that's Mike Larson, who's the head of the San Francisco Writers Conference coming up next month. A wonderful, wonderful gathering. Very practical, a different kind of vibe from what we have here today, and very worthwhile.
Hi. I wanted to find out if you're wanting to publish in different languages outside of just English, would you recommend going the self-publishing route? And especially if your book has an ancient language in it as well. Would it be more receptive to go through the self-publishing route or through the traditional one?
That's a great question. For books in other markets, meaning translation markets, hard to break into for a lot of good reasons. If you are somebody who has relationships and some tie to that other market, I'll just say Spanish for lack of, just for the moment as a case study, if you know you've got a presence in Mexico as well and can publish your book successfully in Spanish, go ahead and do it. That's great. For other markets, foreign rights agents aren't going to want to talk to you as an individual author. They'll talk to me because I bring them a lot of books every year. So my Japanese sub-agents, it's only a business-to-business relationship. And that's where you may still direct publish your own book domestically, but have an agent representing foreign rights or Hollywood rights or other aspects where you couldn't do it yourself. So there isn't one right answer. If you've got great opportunities overseas on your own, pursue it. If not, you're most likely going to need to use a professional who already has those relationships.
There's a certain look to self-published books, a lot of them. Is there a way to get self-published books to look like a really high-quality traditional published book? And if there's a price difference, is it worth it?
Well, there is a big price difference, and that goes towards looking at using a professional designer. And some of it is just common sense. So I've seen self-published books where there's a great front jacket, and then the back is blank. And I've sort of turned it over, and I said, well, what happened? Is this the final jacket? And someone said, well, I just focused on the front. And I said, but when you pick up a book, don't you look at front and back? And there was this horrible, oh, but somehow I thought I didn't have to do that. The other thing is, I mean, try and look at, feel the paper, and there's a difference. And you can, I mean, try and ask. Depending on where it's being printed, you know, try and look at some samples. But there is a professional designer who has worked on books for a variety of publishers, large, small, traditional, and newer ones, knows what a jacket should look like and what an interior design should look like. And that speaks to using someone with a fair amount of experience. You know, one of the good things is there are a lot of resources out there now, but some of them are very new. So when you're looking into them, my sort of cautionary advice should be look at what they've done and see if it looks professional to you, or talk to some other people who have had books published by them or designed by them and take a look at those as a way to gauge the actual finished product.
Hi, up here. What is a publicist going to do for me and my book regionally and nationally?
Well, you know, it would kind of be what you guys decide is the best approach. Depending on where you live, if it's San Francisco, there's, you know, regional radio, TV, and, you know, newspapers, magazines. Depending on, you know, what your subject area is, that would determine who you would approach. Nationally, it's the same thing. I mean, not every book should be on the Today Show, or every book should be on, you know, everybody still wants to be on Oprah, even though it doesn't exist. But, you know, it just, basically it's the same approach, just on a bigger scale with national. And then if you have any, you know, personal connections, we like authors to, if they have any, you know, media contacts, get in touch with them. You know, we'll do the legwork, but make sure that they're letting their contacts know that they have this book coming out, and they would love for them to look at it. And bloggers, same thing. Like, you know, if you're in a specific world and you know that sort of blogger sphere, you know, however it relates to your book, well, you know, we'll ask, you know, what are the best blogs to approach. You know, you can hire a publicist to just focus on a certain type of media. Okay, I just want you to, and it'll be less expensive, so I just want you to reach out to radio, or I just want you to do TV, you know, print, whatever it is. You can usually, with a publicist, kind of like an a la carte menu.
The publicist is sort of the conduit to try and get print, broadcast, online coverage for your book. And the advantage to a publicist doing it versus you, the author, is that the publicist usually has pre-existing relationships with many of the media. I think we've got time for one more question.
I'm a book blogger, and I've seen a lot of anti-self-published sentiment around the blogger sphere or whatever. So how, as an author who theoretically self-publishes a book, how would I avoid this?
You really just need to be better. The issue there is there's nothing you can do to stop the waves of bad stuff that's out there. As in any other artistic endeavor, you know, how many garage bands aren't really good, or people playing, you know, singing in their bathrooms? That's fine. But if you're good, be in the right venues, meaning get your writing out in the right places. Just be better so that almost immediately it's evident, oh, you're not part of that great unwashed. If anybody wants an interesting day, you can come volunteer for me as an intern. It's probably illegal to ask for volunteers, but and just read my blind submissions. And I don't mean any disrespect. I can reject most of the submissions within the first paragraph. But what that means is the stuff that's good leaps off the screen at me. It does not take very long to say, hey, this may or may not eventually be a project that's right for me to represent, but this is somebody of quality. Let me dig deeper and spend more time seeing what it is they've sent me. We all make snap judgments, probably more than we admit. Those are pretty accurate judgments. That's true in every aspect of our world. So I wouldn't worry about the fact that, oh, look, there's all those knuckleheads out there. Great. that makes me look that much better. To the extent you guys are writing, write well, get it out into the right eyeballs, and success will come.
Thank you very much.